When we finished chapter 2, last class, we didn't get to review questions, so I wanted to just go through those right now. Review on page 9. Remember, what was the purpose of the book? That was Ecclesiastes.
You are under the sun, and find what is profitable. What is profitable?
Yeah, that's right. Define what's profitable under the sun. And where do we first see that question stated? What verse?
1-2.
Yeah, verse 3. The answer is in verse 2. And why was the preacher most qualified for this search, to answer this question, to seek out this purpose?
God blessed him with all his resources.
Yes.
Everything
under the sun. Yeah, he was the wisest man. Mm-hmm. And what else did he have?
He was the king.
Yeah, he was wealthy and he was the king. He had authority, he had wealth, and he had wisdom. So there was nothing that was outside of what he was able to do or accomplish or to have done. And of course, what was the focus of this book that we must keep in mind while interpreting these scriptures? Life under the sun. Everything is life under the sun. We have to keep that in mind at all times. So we begin chapter 3. And I'd ask to Mark and to record how many times we found in this chapter the instance of word time. Sorry? Yeah, 32. That's good enough. That's probably how much it is. A couple times I went through and got 31, and then I get 32 every now and then. So, 33. Oh, one extra.
Is that during lifetime in verse 12?
They really squeeze a lot of them in there. And so we begin in verse 1. The first 8 verses is where most of about 28 of those, 29 of those are in chapter verse 1 through 8. A time for everything. Beginning of verse 1, to everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain, and a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to throw away. A time to tear, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time for love, and a time for hate. And a time of war, and a time of peace. And so he really covers everything. As he states in verse 1, to everything there is a season. And we see that everything, of course, it's defined by the context of what we see here. It's not everything, absolutely everything in the world, but looking at all these, everything he's listed are the events and activities associated with man, the labors of men. And we see that everything is, for everything there is a season. Of course, see in the next verses there's a time for every purpose. When you look up season in the dictionary, you see it's the idea of a suitable or natural time or occasion, or a fitting time. To everything there is a fitting time. And I ask you, if you look at all these things, to everything there's a time. Are all these things desirable or pleasant to us?
No.
No. What things wouldn't we find pleasant in this list?
Mourning and weeping.
Yeah, mourning and weeping.
Killing.
War and dying.
Yeah, war and dying.
Hate.
Yes, hate. It's not easy to hate. But, it's a strain on the body. I don't know if you ever get angry. That doesn't feel good either. But, yeah, none of these are pleasant things. And if we had our way, we'd just skip some of those things altogether. But there is a time for every one of these things, a fitting time for each one. And of course, when you're reading these different events, these different labors, it's important to keep in mind that, you know, at that time it's a very agricultural-based society. So, you know, if you're looking at some of them, I don't know if everyone understood all of them or not, but in the context of agriculture, most of them are easy to understand. And of course, like here when we talk about a time to kill and a time to heal, I don't think we're talking about a time to kill other people, even though for some reason that's what popped in my head first. You know, why would we do that? And of course, that fits in with war, but in an agricultural society, we might also see, to feed yourself, you're raising flocks and herds of sheep and goats, and when it's time to eat, it's time to go kill one of them. And I don't know if anyone's ever killed any animals, but I wouldn't find that too pleasant. I suppose you get used to it if you do it a lot, which I don't. But if you've raised these animals through your life, or then to go and kill them, that's their purpose. But it's something you have to do. May or may not be pleasant. Depends, I guess, on the heart of the person. So beyond that, we see that all these things occur, whether we like them or not. Going to ask my questions again. So are these times of our choosing? We see whether we don't like some of these things, yet they occur. Are the times given here, are they of our choosing?
No.
No, they're not. We see that in verse 2. The time to be born and the time to die. The time to plant and the time to pluck what is planted. None of these things are of our choosing. None of us individually chooses when we're born. Our parents may or may not choose when to have us, if it's planned. And certainly none of us choose when we're gonna die. And we don't choose when we're gonna plant either. I mean, certainly you could choose, I'm gonna plant something, I'm gonna plant some corn in December. And I could choose to plant it, but am I gonna be very successful with that? No, you're not. You don't plant corn in December, at least not in the northern hemisphere. It's not going to grow. I'm planting my garden recently. Spinach and peas, you plant those at a certain cool season. You don't plant those in the summer. They're not going to be successful in the summer. So that just falls in line with we plant according to the seasons, and everything's fitting time has a fitting time to be planted. And all these activities have a fitting time to occur in our lives. I also want to look at verse 11, skipping ahead about the times of our choosing. We see in verse 11, God, He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He's put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I'll focus on the first part, where He has made everything beautiful in its time. God here is choosing when things are going to be done. In His time, we don't know how things are going to play out, and I don't want to talk too much on that because we're about to get into it. But also in 16 and 17, we see, moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there, and in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. And I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every purpose and for every work. And when we see wickedness, we see injustice. What do we want?
We want everything to be fair.
We want everything to be fair, and we want fairness right now, don't we?
Yeah.
We want that to stop. We don't like to see, corruption in the government. That's got to stop, and it's got to stop right now. We don't like to see people oppressed right now. If we had our way, that would stop right now. It wouldn't go on. If someone was to do some injustice, we want correct retribution or punishment quickly, immediately. Immediate judgment of that. And is that what we see in life?
No.
We see that's God takes care of that, but He takes care of it in His time. And we don't know always when that time will be. So moving to verse 11, I wanted to move on to that, talking about its context of time. God makes everything beautiful in its time. How do we interpret that?
you talk about the natural things. It's just God made the world to be like it is, and you can't change. There's some things you just can't change. Like when you mentioned plant, those things are God set in motion, the seasons and such, and they're not going to change. Because that's what God did for us, for mankind.
Yeah, so you made...
The natural world is here because God put it here. He set things in order, and that's not going to change.
Correct.
We don't understand. I think that, that's what it took. We don't understand the beginning and the end of things, because we don't understand how God worked and how He did that.
Yeah, so we see this beautiful... We're not talking about, beauty of, the beauty of nature. As God made everything, you look out and it's a bright, clear day, and that's beautiful. This idea of, it's just, wonder and awe. But it's, I guess it is somewhat to that. It depends how you define beautiful. A lot of times when we think of beautiful, we think of, a beautiful animal or a beautiful person, and there's attractiveness there. When you look up beautiful in the dictionary, you see this idea of something that is generally pleasing. And moreover, in a second, the defining I saw was possessing qualities of beauty, such as proportion and symmetry, elegance, flawlessness, perfection and unity. And I think we sort of see that idea here is God has made everything beautiful, and it's time that there's... We know God, and in the rest of that verse, we talk about God's plan that we don't know. But God does have His plan. We don't know it, but there's an elegance to it. There's a perfection in what God does. And so everything is beautiful to God. Or you could also use, I think the New American Standard Version uses the term appropriate. Everything is appropriate. So that is, it's fitting and it has symmetry. I guess it's difficult to define that. So I know I was just going to ask, do we find all the events in our lives beautiful in a matter, in the form of pleasing? We don't, do we? Like we mentioned before, these examples He's given us, dying, mourning, weeping, are not generally pleasing to us. Chris Elder?
Well, I look at it as like, if it's a bad day, today is cloudy, and I think you would appreciate a pretty day better knowing like the difference between like, oh, having a bad day and a good day. Kind of like just like anything else, time to be born and time to die. It's like you'd appreciate more the time of birth because it's a happy time. But I don't know if you would appreciate it if you never had the opposite of...
You take it for granted, right? If you had beautiful weather every single day, it wouldn't be beautiful anymore. You'd just be, that's just the weather. It's always like that. It's California. Rocky?
Mike, on this list of items, 1 through 8, I've always had difficulty with these passages here, and as I study more and more, I'm getting a much clearer picture in my own mind of what the writer's trying to indicate. As obvious as you read these things, all these are opposites, and that he goes to our extreme, from one extreme to the next extreme. And really, if you look at the list here, on one side, most of those activities are pretty unpleasant. I mean, maybe a few you can argue they're not unpleasant, but most of them, they're favorable or their unfavorable activities. Mm-hmm. And I think the message here on these things, the way I'm viewing it, is it's talking about how man is limited. Man can't control things that happen in his life. They could be favorable things, could be unfavorable things. You can't control it. And it's just emphasizing this other point. And then you get down to verse 9, he asks the question, what profit is there to the worker from which that he has toiled? And here in this particular case, I don't think he has an answer, but I think there's an implied answer. It's the same answer he's been given all the way up to this point. It's a thing. You can't control it. Man has these limitations. So that was kind of one point that, as I continue to say that, I think it's really emphasizing man's limitations.
Yes.
And another thing I've done in the past, which has been a mistake, I believe, is that when you read verse 11, it says, He has made everything appropriate in His time. Of course, that's God. Made everything appropriate in His time. In the past, I have mistakenly gone back and said, well, all these activities in 1 through 9 or 1 through 8 are God approved. And when you go back and look at them, is God telling us it's time to hate? I don't think that's the point He's trying to make in verse 11. But I don't think, you know, the 11 and verse 1 and all these activities, these are God-approved, ordained activities. I think the point is, like I mentioned earlier, just we have limitations, and anything can happen to us. And again, I think there's an implied answer in verse 9, the questions asked. We're kind of left, not with an answer, but I think his answer has been, he's been hitting on all through the previous chapters.
Yeah, I would agree with you that he's speaking of man's limitations, and that's why we go and we look at these things. Hey, you know, the times, you know, are they, some are pleasing, some aren't pleasing. Are they of our choosing? No, these things are outside of our control. And I guess as to the ordained part, I never thought about it. I don't hope I've been trying to imply that through.
I would understand, but I understand personally. I look at when God has made appropriate in His time. Then start verse 1, we put in time for everything. And mistakenly, it's a mistake I made in the past.
I don't know, but I know we do know that God does use, I guess, the wrong actions of men to still fulfill His purposes in His plan, and I know we're going to get to that, if not in this lesson, but one of the following lessons. Yeah, we do, and very soon. But yeah, and I guess I forgot to ask if everyone, you know, wanted any further explanation on those events we see in 1 through 8. Is anything anyone didn't understand or maybe thought was confusing? Anything that just seems odd? Because I know sometimes when I read it, something, well, that's just odd. But, you know, when you look at it more closely, well, that, you know, makes sense within an agricultural society. You know, throwing away stones and gathering stones. Actually, in the Old Testament, whenever I see gathering stones, I automatically think they're about to stone somebody. But that's certainly not the case. Yeah, it's going to be for, you know, you're casting away stones, trying to get stones out of your field. And for gathering, because you have to very certainly use those stones, gathering up to build homes and whatever, walls. like they built the walls of Jerusalem. If not, I guess I'll move on.
No, they just we'll build an offering.
Yeah, build the altars from unhewn stone. So what was that? Okay, so we don't find everything pleasing in our lives, but everything is fitting. Now, I wanted to compare when we look at Genesis chapter 50. Here's where I was really, really close to where I was going. Genesis 50 and 19 and 20. Let's see. This is Joseph. Joseph said to his brothers, "Do not be afraid, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring it about as it is this day to save many people alive." And of course, this is after he's talking, Joseph's talking to his brothers, those who sold him into slavery when he went to Egypt. And now this is after, you know, later in life, after he's been imprisoned wrongfully, he's come out, he's, you know, had the dreams, and all the grain of Egypt's been saved for this great famine. And this evil his brothers did, and yet out of that outcome, all of Egypt's been saved, and the entire family of Abraham, Jacob, has been saved due to Joseph's position. What he's accomplished, he's able to bring them all to Egypt and save them from this severe famine that was in the land. And in Acts 2:23, we talk about Jesus, the apostles on the day of Pentecost preaching. "Him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge of God, you have taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death." And we know that God had this all planned out. And here's something that, you know, these men had committed a wrong. That Jesus has been sacrificed, been put to death, but it's a sacrifice for us. And God's full plan, full purpose comes into view and is accomplished through the, you know, in some cases, the inappropriate actions of men. And so we're not able to plan these out. We're not able to see these things. And if we were planning things out, we certainly wouldn't do things, I'm certain, in that way, these sort of events. But God does. I don't know if anyone have any questions or comments to add to that. I don't know how you... these actions, I guess, were all... I don't know how to tie it in with Rocky's thing. It's ordained or not. And certainly, it's in God's plan. It's in His foreknowledge that these were to occur for a purpose.
Of course, God doesn't approve.
Sorry?
I said, let me try Buddy in the water a little more.
Uh-oh.
In verse 1, he makes a general statement. There's a time for everything and every event. He makes 28 specifics in the next few verses, 7 verses. And he concludes with the statement in verse 9. What a prophet is it? You take all the births and all the deaths, all the wars and all the peace, all the planning, all the uprooting. Take it all. When you die, what have you got?
Nothing.
That's his point. Nothing. But
he
professes his faith that God's in control versus them. He allows these things to happen. He'd like to know why, verse 11, but God won't tell him. That's in 8 that we want to know the past and the future. Let's suppose the story of Joseph happened, but I didn't know what you just read. Didn't change the fact that it happened. And if there was nothing else, when Joseph died, he's just like he was when he was born.
Yeah.
And so, verse 17 again, he indicates his faith in the sovereignty of God. But it just don't work according to his calendar. So really, you're back to the main point of the book. Life under the sun is leading you in a pretty futile circumstance.
Yep. That's the case throughout the book.
I was thinking about when you went to Acts. I mean, the Jews did that. I mean, God gave them this knowledge, and they didn't accept. We could do the same. We may not accept it because of different things, bias or whatever, just misunderstanding. But we can do that. We don't understand God. We don't understand His wisdom, what His plan is for us. And that's, I think, some of the point of this text.
Yeah.
Even if God gave us the wisdom, which He did, some of it, we don't understand it sometimes. We just don't, because of whatever reason it may be.
So yeah, we know everything is vanity. We're going to see that over and over again. It's a big redundancy of the book because the answer is always the same, no matter how you look at it. So we don't get to see the final outcome. We don't get to see the plan. We act out our role in the process, even though it is we act out our role in the plan without knowing. Knowing that what we do is vanity under the sun.
Let's take Joseph for a minute. Let's say when he's 17, he knew what he knew when he was 39.
Might have.
And is the answer to the first 9 different?
No.
Okay, if you know or don't know, when you get through, there's no problem.
Yeah.
That's the message of the book.
Right. Might have helped him get through it, though.
Huh?
So it might have helped him get through it. Maybe.
Maybe.
But
not.
Yeah,
that's not the point here. The point is, you don't know.
Yes.
So what do you do? You can live a life in darkness and sorrow, or you can do what he said in verse 10. Chapter 2, the end of the chapter. Chapter 3, the end of the chapter. You enjoy it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're about to lead into is...
Mike, we know something that goes along with, kind of the whole book. I come back to Philippians 4:6 and 4:8, just be anxious for nothing. I mean, really, we're here, we're living. And then in the verse, it tells you what to meditate on. If you have troubles or whatever, you pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that you just personally can't change or do anything about. And we're here. To make the most of it, God's going to take care of us. And He tells us what to do. He says, finally, whatever things are true, whatever things are known, He goes on and says, meditate on these things.
Yes. Well, those things we do know. And we do know that there is, not all things are vanity. In the large scope of truth, we know that our actions and our roles have a purpose in God's plan, and that we will be rewarded and there will be profit. But, you know, in this book, when we look at all the stuff we do within this book, in this context, no, it's not profitable. But yeah, you're right. When you go to that verse and you take a step back to break free of the under the sun scope, it feels better to know that we still don't know God's plan. Well, we know some of God's plan. We don't know all of it, but we do know that what we do in our step, in our little portion, we don't know the outcome long term, but we know it does serve a purpose and has a it has meaning, it has a reward. And I was about to continue on in beginning of verse 9, as we pointed out before. 9 through 15, we discussed man's limitations. We read all these things that, you know, there's a time for everything and a purpose. We don't may not always like it. It's not always of our choosing, but there's a purpose to it. And we see in verse 9, what profit has the worker from all which he labors? And of course, the answer is nothing. In verse 10, Solomon states, I have seen the God-given tasks with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He's made everything beautiful in its time, and also has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. And we see his recommendation, I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labors. It is the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing can nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him, that which is, has already been, and what is to be, has already been. But God requires an account of what is past. And so in verse 10, what do we see, in which way is man limited?
By God. No.
Yeah. Well, in all ways, we're limited by God by what He's done. But here, what is it? Here it says the God-given. What is God given here? Yeah, we're to be occupied with tasks, with labors, and it's given to us by God. That's what we're to do in life, and if God has given it, then, well. As you see in verse 14 and 15, it's not much we can do about it. But, you know, he has a plan. We don't see it, but we perform as we're as we ought. In verse 11, what do we see? How are we limited in verse 11? We've already discussed it to some extent.
God's put things in place, and there's some things you just can't do anything about. Regardless of your time limits, God doesn't have time limits. Nothing we can do about it. We understand it.
Yes, yeah, the fact we don't understand, right? That we don't know. We're limited in our knowledge. And we know here, it talks about, you know, we have the concept of eternity. We know there's more beyond just our small portion in life, but we don't get to know that. And so we want to know the whole plan, but we don't get to know the whole plan. That's how we're limited. God doesn't give us that knowledge. And in 14 and 15, our limitation is... Sorry?
Yes.
Can't create anything new. God's already good enough. Can't change what God has placed.
Yeah, we can't change what God's done. What God is, what God's done, it shall be. There's no changing that. There's no altering it. It's not within our power to do so. And in all these ways, man is limited. Of course, you know, I just wanted to point out that, you know, even though God puts things into to action, to course, and we can't change it, doesn't, I'm no way saying that man doesn't have a free moral will to make his choices for good or evil. And just in case someone would take that and say, no, look, God, whatever God's done, it can't be changed. Whatever He's set your path to be is unchangeable. I'm not trying to say that here at all. Just that God does have a plan, and what God's fixed can't be unfixed.
Mark.
Yes.
You referenced good man. God has a plan. And I guess I'm searching for how that comes out of this text. Maybe I'm just blowing it. I don't see it. It just strikes me the scope of the text. It's not dealing with that at all. It's dealing with what you've been emphasizing throughout. Mm-hmm. And that's life under the sun. He makes this point in verse 9, and you made the point very well about this list of things to do. You know, this time, that time, this time, that. Where are all those times being? What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? What's he been toiling in? Really, he's been toiling in all these things up here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the scope. And then in 10, this is what this is what we occupy. This is just what we occupy ourselves with. God set up with this. This is life under the sun. But I don't see in the text some grand plan. That's all I'm searching for.
Okay.
Where is that in this text?
Well, I don't mean, maybe I'm emphasizing it too much. I see it in verse 11, and then with the other things it's stating. It's talking about no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. And I guess I take that as God's doing work. He's not doing work like we do work, just vain work that's not going to mean anything. If we're talking about God, he's performing some action. We want to know what that action is, how we fit into it, I guess. And I guess maybe I'm reading too much into it. But I see that, and I see with the God-given tasks he's given us, the recommendation that, you know, this is how we're to live. We see the recommendation that we should eat, drink, and enjoy what we have. It's the gift of God, something else given by God. And then we see in 14 and 15, it goes into that which God does shall be forever. Nothing can be changed from it. And what has already been is what will be. I guess that's not part of it. I just see that whatever God does, it shall be forever. I guess I interpret that as God's plan, and in fitting everything into, you know, the making everything beautiful in its time. He has a purpose for all these things. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but that's how I see
God's
it.
Plan. Jonah did.
Mm-hmm.
Jonah was did. Moses did. I said, I'm going to destroy this nation. Moses, don't do that, God. I said, I'm going to destroy this Syria. John was preached to him. He repented. Repented and changed. This was written 1,000 years before Christ. We're 2,000 years after Christ.
We've seen more of the plan than
Is
they
there
have.
Still a time to weep, a time to kill, a time to mourn, a time to laugh?
Yes.
That's God's work. We can't change that. Life under the sun still profits. You can do that. And so, if you tell me what God does, and God sets this up like this, that you're occupied with these tasks, and that's it. You don't like that kind of view of life, but that's the way it is. And why aren't we thankful for the New Testament? Let's go.
Yeah. Maybe I'm calling to my... What I'm trying to do.
Well, just stay with the work
do.
That he's talked about,
yeah.
You know, in the text, like Wallace talked about there. And so, no difference today than when this was written 3,000 years ago.
Yeah. All the actions
that
we do,
can't change.
We can't change. And they're still futile. Rocky?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that verse 14. Again, look at the book relative to the viewpoint of the book, and I expand beyond it. I know that everything God does. Well, what is the scope here? And I think it's going to reiterate what's been said already. You know, talking about the cycles of life, the things that he just talked about here, verse 1, right? He says, "Will remain forever." Well, cycles of life going to remain forever? Well, the earth's going to be destroyed. So, forever is relative to something.
Yeah,
it's forever relative to man's limitations, how romance scopes it. So I think it's, you know, looking at the cycles of life, and it is, does look forever relative to man.
Relative
so
to our lifespan.
To our lifespan.
far as I know, the sun's going to keep on burning and the earth's going to keep turning. As long as my parents were alive, and probably, maybe, you know, we know, Lord willing, as long as I'm alive, for all I know, extents and purposes. It's been doing it for thousands of generations. I assume it'll do a little longer for mine. But, Craig?
When I was looking at this passage, 16, that's not the verse we're talking about. I went back and looked at, like, 2:10, when he said, my heart is pleased because of all my labor, and this is my reward for all my labor. And then verse 11, it's almost like he says the opposite, but it's really not the opposite. It's just, you kind of harmonize what he says. He says, all the things which all the labor which I have done, all the vanity trying after wind, there's no profit.
Yeah.
I went back and I looked at, then I went back at 1 verse 13 and phrases like this. At the end of 13 where it says, it is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men. Given to the sons of men, that those kind of phrases. He says there that it's a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted in them. And we, of course, we already know, you know, thus far in the study, but what we're talking about, verse 3:10 says, the task which God has given the sons of man, which to occupy themselves. But then, in verse 16 and 17, I thought it was really interesting because he says, you know, there's wicked and good places, there's good and wicked places. And he said, God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked man. In verse 18, I said to myself concerning the sons of men, God has surely tested them in order to see that they are but beasts. So he says, well, you know, God's given a lot of tasks to men, and I feel like they're afflicted, or we're afflicted. And then he says, well, there's the sons of men are occupied with all these things. And he says that he's going to, God has surely tested them in order to see that they are but beasts. So the idea of, you know, under the sun, and can't forget verse 14 either. That Rocky mentioned, God has worked that men should fear him. And trying to harmonize these things together, it seems like you get a little bit of a picture of what, you know, there is the labor under the sun, there is the striving after wind, the vanity, and there's no profit in it. But there's also a purpose that's behind all of this. It's not that, you know, we're just here to live and die, obviously. And you know, you see the Solomon pouring forth that out too. But it's almost like the times when we're tempted, how it's the way that we act, the way that we respond, you know, brings about perseverance and endurance and moral character. You know, all these things were in place. God put them in a place to show that, you know, he was all-powerful so that people would fear, so they'd realize that we are powerless, that we do have to answer to God.
Yeah. But yeah, that's really where the whole section here, where we're talking about man's limitations, what moral purpose does it serve? And we see that in 14. And in the 14 it says that men should fear before him. That we don't, they know, we can stop using plan. We don't know God's works. And he's given us this labor to which we're to exercise ourselves with. We can't change or alter some things. God set things in motion, and we follow, you know, we just go along with that, you know, the cycles of life. But it's, you know, its purpose is to fear God, and more than just fearing him, but to trust in God. If we fear God, we're going to trust in God. Part of that, he knows what we don't, so we have to trust in him. And I was going to point out, I mean, maybe I read the end of 15 wrong, but when I see that at the end of 15, he talks about that which has already been, that which has been, has been. And he moves on and says, and God requires an account of what is past. And in the footnote, or at least that's what mine reads, and in the footnote it says, 15, the account of what is pursued. And to me, we talk about right after, and then right after that it leads into the judgment of wickedness. And I see that God requires account of what is past as sort of a reckoning of, we're given these tasks, we perform our tasks, and he requires an account of what we've done with the time we have and what how we've performed things, sort of a judgment on us. And after fearing him, I don't know if that reads the same way to you or not.
What is he going to do? Because I'm a wicked man all my life. What's he going to do to me more than the guy who's righteous?
Under the sun?
Yeah.
Yep. Nothing beyond death that we're
God sees what his path. You say there's a cycle that just keeps happening over and over and over again. What's happening in the past happens again. The thing that makes it grievous or evil in chapter 1 in verse 13, the Solomon's rich. Is that grievous? No. Chapter 9 talks about living with a wife you love. Is that grievous? It's not the fact that's grievous. It's the fact that rich or having a wonderful wife, what happens to it all?
It's gone in the end.
That's what he says in verse 18 of chapter 1. Because there's much wisdom, there's much grief. The more you know about this, the dog don't stop thinking about that. The hog don't stop thinking about that. The man does. Because there's that eternity in his heart. What the more you think about it, maybe this is it. Well, what would it be an atheist?
Yeah, we look for more.
No wonder a person who's sick and hurt commits suicide. Why not? This is all you've got. So it may be rich, you've got a wonderful family. It's still grievous from the standpoint of the world.
Yeah, from
I don't know if it's a good illustration or not. Maybe not. But it's hard in this book because it's so different to keep our focus on everything we read. I've been told people that walk a high wire keep a focus on the other end of the deal. I don't know if that's so. But imagine trying to walk a high wire, people moving, people hollering, screaming, things going on, and being able to keep your focus over there. If we're going to interpret this book, it's easy for us to be distracted with all this stuff that we know and everything else we've read. 66 books in the Bible is the only one like it. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to get our interpretation correct, we better keep our focus.
Yes, it's very important in this book. I'm trying to do it.
It's a difficult question. I think you've been doing a good job, but it's easy for us to warble. We know about this and that, but stay with that.
I'm not talking about what I'm saying. Let's
see here. I wanted to return to a few verses here I was going to compare after discussing that in ways in which man is limited. In verse 17 of chapter 8. talks about, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun, for though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. And so we're talking about not able to know everything, not able to know all the things that are done, which we want to know. And if you turn to Job 33, this is one of Job's friends talking to him in 33, verses 12 through 13. Just illustrations. Look, he's talking to him, look in this, you are not righteous. I will answer you, for God is greater than man. Why do you contend with him? For he does not give an accounting of any of his words. And also in verse chapter 37 of Job. And 23 through 24. As for the Almighty, we cannot find him. He is excellent in power, in judgment, and abundant justice. He does not oppress. Therefore, men fear him. He shows no partiality to any who are wise of heart. And also in chapter 40, 69. I'll read that real quick. When God does talk to Job, he says, have you an arm like God, or can you thunder with a voice like his? Then adorn yourself with majesty and splendor, and array yourself with glory and beauty. Disperse the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. Where is it? Did I even start at the right spot? 69. Then the Lord answered Job, "Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you will answer me." And he goes on and says, "Would you indeed know my judgment? Would you condemn that you may be justified? Have you an arm like God, or can you thunder like God's voice?" And he's just showing the limitations of man. We don't know everything like God does. We are not able to perform things as God does. And I guess we'll have to stop there. Okay.